Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We have a market free agent reset in Major League Baseball. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. And that was the big news today. Mookie Betts will not hit free agency before he even plays a single game with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He has agreed to a mega extension, $365 million over the next 12 years, and Mookie Betts will more than likely end his career in a Los Angeles Dodger uniform, a deal that would keep him there till 2032. Okay, so you combine that with the one-year deal that he has at $27 million, and Mookie Betts is now on a 13-year, $392 million deal with the Dodgers, with his actual pay for this season prorated. It's one of the biggest contracts in sports history. News trickled out this morning. I believe it was a radio station in Boston that was first to report it, and then ESPN dug a little deeper in it to get the logistics out. Mookie Betts, being a huge superstar in Los Angeles, this deal's worth more than $392 million, if you know the market. This is a big deal. And to be honest with you, I'm a little surprised that it comes at this particular time. In fact, Mookie and Dodger president Andrew Friedman just had a press conference a few moments ago. And one of the first questions that was asked to Mookie, what made you feel comfortable enough to sign this 12-year extension with a team that you've never even played a game with? And he said it's really just the optics of the franchise, everything that they have going for them right now. And let's be honest, this is a very profitable baseball franchise. They're not going to be afraid to pay the luxury tax. They never have before. But the Dodgers have a lot of really good young contracts on the roster. They don't have to pay Cody Bellinger until 2023. They don't have to pay Walker Buehler until 2024. What this tells me is that the Dodgers are going to be the cream of the crop, or at least a part of the cream of the crop in the National League for many years to come. Really, it's a textbook on how a franchise should be set up. And I think there's four or five in Major League Baseball right now, just well-oiled machines that know how to reload, know how to take care of the farm system, and are patient with their money. I think there's a handful of teams in Major League Baseball today. Even the Yankees ran into some problems lately. The Braves, I think, are in the midst of becoming a team similar to what the Dodgers are putting together right now because their farm system is completely loaded. There's no horrible contracts on that team. And it's also important to mention that the Dodgers have some contracts coming off the books relatively soon. Justin Turner's in the final year of his deal. Kenley Jansen will be in the final year of his contract next season. And so, yes, it's a great day for the Los Angeles Dodger organization. And I'm sure for Dodger fans, it's probably a little bit relieving to see that they finally are investing in a big-time deal. They didn't want to give Manny Machado the money. I can't say I blame them. They tried to give Bryce Harper a lot of money, but over a short period of time. It was like a three-year deal. They were going to pay him something close. I think it was like $40 million a year for 3 years. It wasn't a long-term deal. They make this trade for Mookie Betts. They don't give up a ton for him. They give up Alex Verdugo and Jeter Downs. That's basically what they gave up for Mookie Betts. And then you sign him to a long-term deal. I think it's a win for the Los Angeles Dodgers. But as I said, it resets the market, right? Because Mike Trout got, what was it, a $430 million deal or something like that over the course of 13 years. So you wondered what would be the next contract. Typically, the next biggest contract tops the previous biggest contract. That's not the case for Mookie. Okay, so you go back and you look at the Christian Yelich deal. Mookie is now signed. Mike Trout is now signed for the foreseeable future. Those are three of the top four players in the game. In that top four with those three, you have Cody Bellinger. And I think Bellinger is going to get somewhere between that $350 to $400 million range, which tells me by the time the Dodgers re-up Walker Buehler, between Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger, and Walker Buehler, they're going to have close to $1 billion in contracts for those three players. Think about that. That's the route that we are moving right now in Major League Baseball. Now, we are on the eve of opening night for Major League Baseball. We'll see Mookie Betts finally in a Dodger uniform tomorrow as they take on the San Francisco Giants. We also will get the Yankees and the Nationals. I just don't think it gets any better than that to open up the season. That's set for a 5 p.m. start tomorrow night. Gerrit Cole, one of the richest contracts in sports history as well. He's going to show off his Yankee pinstripes as they go up against the World Series champion Nationals. And I believe that's a slept-on team. You know, when you look at the predictions, a lot of people not really talking about Washington. Yes, they lost Anthony Rendon, but when you look at a 1-2-3, even 4 if you want to throw Anibal Sanchez in there, I mean, you have Strasburg, Scherzer, and Patrick Corbin. I don't think we can sleep on the defending champion Washington Nationals. We are going to talk some Major League Baseball on the show today. We're going to be joined by Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher who now handles pre- and post-game shows for the San Francisco Giants on their flagship station. And we're going to talk Major League Baseball. We'll talk more about the Mookie Betts deal and what this means for the rest of the National League West. They're trying to play catch-up right now with the Dodgers, and I don't believe they're going to win that race anytime soon. Be it the Giants, Rockies, Diamondbacks, maybe the Padres, there's a glimmer of hope. That's a young team with some exciting talent. But we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the season. I've enjoyed watching the scrimmage games. There's no fans in the stands. It's a different type of dynamic. I've enjoyed it, but we'll gear up for opening night tomorrow. Also on the show today, we're going to continue to highlight USU Eastern Athletics. We've been doing this over the last 2 months. Once a week, we talk to one coach at USU Eastern, and we are down to the final two sports. Today, a little bit unorthodox, we're going to talk esports. Esports is really starting to pick up in this country. You're seeing a lot of dollars being thrown at video game type sports. USU Eastern recently started up the program a year ago. Kevin Vanderspeck is the head coach. He'll join us. He'll give us the ins and outs. I got to be honest with you, I do not know a whole lot about the esports scene. In fact, I know next to nothing about it. How do these student athletes, what's life like for them? What do they have to do in order to prepare? Are scholarships involved? We'll talk esports. I think it'll be an interesting conversation. And again, we'll talk some Major League Baseball. And that's really what we have lined up on the show today. Basketball is back as well. We get some scrimmage games in the Orlando bubble. The Denver Nuggets showcased Bol Bol, son of Manute Bol, who slipped down the draft board. Actually looked pretty good for the Nuggets. If we have time a little bit later on in the show, we'll take a look at some of the statistics. National sports is back. That's the big reoccurring theme on the show today, and it will be tomorrow as well. We're going to break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up, plus a local sports recap right after this, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We've been highlighting different sports at USU Eastern, one a week, for about the last 2 months. And now we're down to the final two sports. Today, a little bit different route, esports. I'll admit, I know next to nothing about esports. I do, however, know it's a fairly new program at USU Eastern. In fact, the esports program just wrapped up its first season, and that's what we're going to highlight today. Joining us right now, the head coach of the esports program at USU Eastern, Kevin Vanderspeck. And Coach, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. I think this will be an interesting conversation. Again, esports, it's so new to USU Eastern. And so I'm going to let you explain esports. I got the basis of it. You and I have had a conversation off the cuff. But esports, that's kind of a vague term, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I get a lot of questions from people asking what esports is and what it means. And it really is just competitive video games. There are a lot of video games out there that have really strong competitive scenes. Like you can think of Call of Duty Modern Warfare or League of Legends or some of the other big name titles out there. And it really is just competing in those video games in different leagues and different matches and tournaments.
I've always found this interesting because I was blown away. I was at a pinball convention. I love pinball. I love to play pinball. So I go to this convention and there was a line of people lining up around a table to interact with a guest. Now, I wonder who's here today. Well, it turned out it was the Utah Jazz esports team, their NBA 2K team. And I was blown away by the popularity of it, blown away that people were lining up to meet these guys. I mean, this is something that has taken off over the last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. And you can really look at the numbers online and just see how big competitive video games really is in a various amount of communities. I mean, you can go to like the Salt Lake Comic Con and you can really look at the different esports communities that people will really wait a long time to meet. And the community online for these competitors for video games is kind of amazing to see. It definitely has grown a lot in the last 5 to 6 years.
Well, let's talk about your background. First off, why you came to USU Eastern and how you became the first coach of the esports program. Give me the basis and the background, Kevin.
Right. So I actually came down to USU Eastern to go to school and to study, but I first was recruited to actually do debate when they almost kickstarted the program, and that was definitely a lot of fun. Now, just a few years later, as I'm about to graduate with my bachelor's, the dean of students, I think at the time, what his title was, Christian Olson, he came to me and asked me to start an esports program. He knew that, and everyone really knew that I had always played video games, and I've always been part of the esports community in my private life, and he just wanted me to take that experience that I had and really apply it to the university level. And then from there, it kind of just took off.
Yeah, it's always interesting when you bring a coach in to start up a program. I mean, we've had a number of programs kickstart here pretty recently at USU Eastern, be it soccer, be it softball. So what were some of the challenges that you faced in starting up this program?
Definitely. So I think one of the biggest challenges we had was how many options there were. There were so many different options for equipment. There were so many different options for space. There was just so many options to shuffle through everything was really took a lot of time. And to be honest, it's kind of a good problem to have when we had all of those different things to really look at. And I really had a lot of help from the different departments on my campus to really help me make the decisions that I needed to get all the equipment that we need. So that's probably the biggest challenge that we had was just making a decision on what we wanted, just because there were so many different options out there. And then after that, you know, I consistently get emails from different companies or different students on, you know, what esports looks like. And so that continues to be, and honestly, it's a good problem to have. I have to make decisions on what different things that we want to incorporate into our program.
Yeah, when you say equipment, the first thing that pops into my mind would be a video game console. I mean, is that accurate? Is it PlayStation or is it Xbox or what's the equipment base here for this program?
Yeah, that's fair. So we actually mostly have computers. We have custom PCs that we designed and built ourselves, and so that's the biggest portion of our equipment, but I also mean like desks and chairs for the computers. We have Nintendo Switches, tables for those, and then we also have PlayStations. And so the biggest project was probably designing and then building the computers.
Kevin Vanderspeck, again, coach of USU Eastern's esports team, our guest right now. Kevin, it is fascinating, really, when you take a look at what has become of esports. And you and I had a conversation off of the cuff, and you mentioned making sure that these athletes are in shape. Right. And this goes across the board for any sport we're talking about. We know what the weekly regime is for, say, a basketball player or a baseball player or a softball player, because we have these conversations often. What's that like for an esports player?
Yeah, definitely. So for an esports player, we still have very high importance on like homework and trying to be, you know, trying to exercise and have those things. The exercise requirements definitely aren't as rigorous as someone who plays basketball, but we see the importance of being in physical shape to have like your best mental performance. And so what we're going to be doing is having the students have just a basic level of fitness, and while obviously, you know, still keeping up with their academics is their number one priority. And so the, really like the, as far as like the practice schedule and what their week will look like, they have practice 3 to 5 days a week. Kind of depends on the hours that we have per practice. Also depends on the title. And then they really just kind of go through their regular life. They'll go to the gym a couple of times a week. They will do their homework every day, obviously, and they'll complete their study hours.
So what's a competition look like for the team when you guys actually compete against other schools? What does that consist of?
So it's typically online. We haven't done any person-to-person competition, and I don't think we're going to for a little while. But we know when our matches are because we're part of the NJCAA, the esports division. And so they'll let us know that we're playing on maybe Tuesday at 2 p.m. or Tuesday at 5 p.m. And we'll go to either the esports arena that we have in the student center, which is a really cool space, or as far as next semester, they're going to be doing it mostly from home. And they'll log on, and I'll log on as well. And then we use Discord as a medium. It's kind of like Skype. So we all log on and meet. And then from there, we connect to the other school and set up the match and have them play.
It's unique, that's for sure. I mean, this is all something new to me. And I guess the next question I can ask is the level of talent that you're looking for, and how do you find it when you go out and recruit? Again, sports-wise, it's easy, right? You learn about a kid, you go watch him play, be it baseball, softball, basketball, doesn't matter what sport. You go out, you actively recruit the kid. How do you do this with video games?
Right. So I would say the hardest thing about recruiting for esports is the number of titles that there are. So I need to be proficient at all of these titles, not necessarily a professional level, but I need to understand what talent looks like for these different games. So that's probably the most challenging thing, just because I need to be versed in all of them. But I actually have a partnership with iTeam USA, and they help me connect with high school students, especially in Utah. And then from there, I get to watch them during their competitions regularly, and I get to visit, or I used to get to visit these schools and really talk to them face-to-face. And that's been absolutely critical in my experience to recruit these students. It's through those partnerships and through their own leagues. So I actually get to watch them just as they practice and regularly compete, which has been a very helpful tool, I would say.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's like anything else. I mean, there are, how do I say this? There are participants that are good, but there's next level participants. I mean, this goes across the board. It doesn't matter what we're talking about, right? And so when you're out recruiting a kid, what are you looking for that says, yeah, this kid is an elite level video gamer?
Mm-hmm. So a few things that might be surprising as well is I really look at their academics, because one of the really important aspects of being good at any competitive video game is a really good like work ethic and a really good like practice, self-motivation and self-practice and kind of self-discipline, and that really shines through in academics. So that's a really important part for me. Also, looking at the match history for the different various games that they have, and most of these competitive games have an internal matchmaking like ranking system, and so that's another really important thing that I look at. But I also ask them to send me footage of them actually playing the game, so that's really helpful as well. But there definitely is, and I think that we're really set up for Rocket League next year, that we found some of those real next level players, because they're top of those leaderboards, they're top in their academics, and so I definitely think that there are those different, you know, kind of sections of players. But, you know, academics and how well they do on those live broadcasts or on the competitions really can tell me how good they are at the game.
And you've actually been able to hand out some scholarships, correct?
Yes, for sure. So we have two scholarships, and we're offering a third one right now, two of them to two Timpanogos students, so in Utah. And they're going to be coming in the fall and competing for us in Rocket League in the NJCAA, the esports division. And I think that we obviously have a really good chance, and I'm pretty excited to really see them at work.
So when parents tell their kids, put the video game system down and get outside and play, you probably, you can counter that a little bit now, right? And say, hey, look, you can go to college to play video games.
Yeah, a little bit for sure. I would just let them know that they can definitely pay for their education and really help them succeed in their lifetime goals. But of course, those things are important, like going outside and having the balance that you need. And the way that I really see it is, if you want to be competitive in anything, and I mean really anything, is that you have to have balance and you have to be able to really work hard at academics, and you really have to be willing to work on yourself and as well as the thing that you're being competitive in. So still go outside, but definitely don't put the game down forever.
Yeah, well, it's definitely interesting. It's fun, to say the least, and I'm looking forward to where the program goes in the future. Again, Coach Kevin Vanderspeck, our guest right now. He's the esports coach at USU Eastern. It was a pleasure, Coach, to get you on the show today. I definitely appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
We're going to break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. We're going to focus heavily on Major League Baseball over the next few segments here on the show. I'm moving into tomorrow as well. We're going to be joined by Bill Askey, former big league pitcher, who is now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants. We'll preview tomorrow's opening night. That's coming up here on Drive Time Sports.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports, gearing up for opening day of Major League Baseball. I really didn't think I was ever going to be able to say that this year, but here we are on the eve of opening day. Tomorrow night, we get the Yankees Nationals, we get the Dodgers Giants. It's exciting just thinking about it, and we have a lot of baseball storylines to talk about, including the new richest player in baseball history, Mookie Betts, joining us right now to talk about that. We have Bill Laskey, former big league pitcher, now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants. Bill, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, especially when we're ready to see the first game of the 2020 baseball season coming up tomorrow. And it's going to be an exciting one. When you got the Nationals Scherzer against the Yankees Cole, what could you imagine even better than that?
Oh, I agree. I agree. And Bill, I guess we can start with this. We've seen the scrimmage games, the exhibition games. Can't call them spring training. But we've seen these exhibition games. And I really enjoy it a lot more without the fans than I thought I would. I mean, it doesn't compare to baseball with the packed stands. I mean, opening day, that's kind of synonymous with it, right? Everybody loves baseball for the first couple of weeks before the diehards really take over. But I got to tell you, I've enjoyed just the difference in viewing without the audience. It's been enjoyable.
It sure has. And I have to commend Major League Baseball with all the testing and how precautionary they are with so many different things of each team. It's just going to be what's next when they start traveling, and I think that's going to be the biggest question, and how they're going to keep the bubble around the team at the hotel and as way get to the park, back to the park. I think that's going to be the next step Major League Baseball is really going to keep an eye on.
And for you, I know that you're going to be doing some work with the Giants. You're strictly from home, correct?
Yeah, the engineers came in KBR and set me up with an in-home system, and the equipment works with headsets and everything. So I'll be doing the post-game on Saturdays and Sundays from my house, which is great because I don't have to go to the studio, and they just don't let any of the hosts do anything at the studio. Everything is coming out of the house, out of your home or apartment or wherever you live. And the audio sounds just like you're in the studio, so it's been really cool to see the setup, and I've tested it out many times, and I'm excited for this weekend, especially with the Dodger-Giants four-game series. The Giants played extremely well the last two games against the A's. They only gave up two hits yesterday, but their long ball's hitting the ball. They've been really hitting the ball well. Yastrzemski and Dickerson hit home runs yesterday, and the ball was flying out of Oracle Park. A little strange. It usually doesn't, but what they've done, they've covered all the knot holes in right field where the wind would come through the field, and literally it's just taking a ball out. So look for, when you're watching Oracle Park in 30 games here, watch the ball to carry a little bit more because it was jumping last night.
Well, let's talk about that first opponent for the Giants. It'll be the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they made some big noise today. Mookie Betts will not hit free agency. In fact, it looks like he is going to be a Dodger for the remainder of his baseball life. A 13-year deal worth more than $380 million. It's mind-boggling, Bill, when you look at it. Just all the way around, that's a lot of money to spend on a baseball player.
It sure is, and the length of the contract, too. I look at that. But, you know, when they traded for him, there was no doubt they were going to try to sign him, and they were not going to let him get to free agency. That's a great player for the L.A. Dodgers coming from the Red Sox, and they really believe in him. And when they traded for him, there was no doubt they were keeping an eye on him for longevity. But you're looking at a lot of other players on that team, Bellinger being one, Buehler being one. A couple of those guys coming up with free agency down the road. So the Dodgers are loaded, no doubt, and the Dodgers are keeping this team together. And they just need to get to the playoffs and get to the World Series, see if they can win one, because they've been short the last few years.
Yeah, and looking at what they have done, and again, I know they have not won a World Series. They've come close, but they haven't been able to get over the hump in the last 32 years or so. But what Andrew Friedman has been able to accomplish in the front office, Bill, I don't think you can really overstate it. I mean, it may just be the book on how to create a franchise that is competitive for years to come. I mean, even though they're spending close to $400 million on Mookie Betts, you still have a lot of young contracts that aren't up for a couple of more seasons. I mean, you take a look at this roster, Corey Seager, Gavin Lux, Will Smith, Dustin May. The Dodgers are primed with such a great young farm system to be good for years down the road. This may be the team to beat in the National League West for the next 10 years, the way things are shaping up.
And they've pretty much conquered the NL West the last 7-8 years. You know, they won the NL West convincingly. And when you start looking at teams that could contend against them, there really isn't a stronger team in that division. So there's no doubt they've become stronger, if you can imagine that, by getting Betts in this long-term contract. And as we looked, you know, before all the COVID hit, in some of the deals they were trying to land some pitchers with, Jock Peterson was thrown out there and a couple other guys, but it never came to fashion. So no doubt about it, the Dodgers have depth. And even in their minor league system, they have some very good young talent. And this is going to be a team that they're going to have to contend with, and other teams are going to have to try to build their organization similar to this. But until they beat the team at the top, the Dodgers are definitely the team to beat in the NL West, and it's going to take a lot of good teams to try to contend with them, even in a 60-game series.
Could you disagree if I said the Dodgers now have two of the top four players in the game in their outfield with Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger? I mean, that's a fair statement to make, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, when you're looking at the talent both those guys have, their swing pass, how they hit the ball. I mean, they're so good at going the opposite way as even Bellinger taking the ball out of the ballpark. And then you look on the defensive side, both of them are top-line defensive players. So when you look at this Dodger lineup, it's just one player after another, and now you got a DH in there. So you add another bat in that lineup. It's going to be a tough task. And the Dodgers and the Giants are playing the first four games in L.A. And if, I tell you what, we were talking about this yesterday. If the Giants come out 0-4 and you're down four first four games, they have to come out with a split or somehow, some way, win 2-3 games. And that's going to be a real tough task the first four games.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now as we talk Major League Baseball again. Opening night tomorrow with the Yankees and Nationals and then the Dodgers and the Giants. Bill, there was some uncertainty this week. We didn't know where the Toronto Blue Jays would be playing after Canada said, no, you're not playing Major League Baseball over here. We're not going to allow it. Fortunately, the Pittsburgh Pirates step up, and that's exactly where the Toronto Blue Jays will be playing their baseball this season. I guess you couldn't ask for anything more like out of the blue, right? The Blue Jays playing at PNC Park in Pittsburgh, but it's 2020, so go figure.
It's true, and you know it's the whole state of baseball. You know, I was just glad Toronto ended up hooking up. They were talking about going to their AAA team in Buffalo, and that ballpark is falling fast. It was really good 10 years ago, but the lighting was bad, and the clubhouses were not top of the line. Then they were talking about going to Dunedin and they're going into Florida. And I think Major League Baseball said, no chance, don't even try to go down there. And I think they worked it out with Pittsburgh, and I was glad they got to work it out, where they have a big league stadium. Then, of course, PNC Ballpark's a beautiful place to play. And it just adds value to Toronto, working out a deal with Pittsburgh and making this work for them so they have a home field and they wouldn't be traveling on the road all the time. It's just going to see how this all works out schedule-wise, and they said it will work out fine. So kudos to both Pittsburgh and Toronto to make that deal happen.
Yeah, I am a little bit surprised, though, that they didn't put Toronto in a stadium with an AL East team, because that would have really limited travel even that much more. That does surprise me a little bit. I thought that that should have been on the table.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I thought somebody would come to fashion and do that. But at least the travel part of it's easier now when you're in Pittsburgh, because that's kind of centrally located for the AL East. And that's a big thing when we're talking about travel and putting everybody in a bubble and things like that. Basketball is doing a great job in it in Florida, and baseball has definitely got a lot of eyes on them from football and NFL football and things like that, because you're traveling with a 30-man roster plus front office, and you've got your coaches and trainers and things like that. So it is going to be important to see how this all translates here in the first couple weeks. And, of course, the testing is going to be going on daily, especially the teams that travel. And they got to stay out of the local pubs and restaurants and go into all these little walk-around places when they go to these cities. They're going to have to be quarantined, and they're going to have to really be careful walking out that hotel. And I think most teams are going to try to keep these players in that hotel and not let them just wander off.
Bill, I want to talk about the other Bay Area team before I let you go, because we were going over our predictions on the show yesterday, and I'm actually going to pick the Oakland A's to win the AL West. It may not be a popular selection, but really, when you take a look at the way this team has performed over the last couple of years and with a condensed 60-game season, I like this Oakland A's offense a lot. I like Matt Olson at first base. I like Tony Kemp at second. I'm a big Chapman fan. You look at the rotation with Montas and Manea. I like this Oakland A's team. Am I completely off base by thinking this is the squad that could change the landscape in the AL West this season and someone unseat the Houston Astros?
It would be great to beat the Astros. The Astros have another dominant team. The A's have a good offensive potent team. Starting pitching is a little question mark there. But at the same time, I think this team could contend easily. Last year they had over 90 wins, so no doubt. I think the A's could easily contend in the AL West, and it's going to be a showdown against them in Houston. And don't forget, there's a couple other teams. The Angels have put a good team together too. It's just going to be a good dogfight, and of course the NL West plays the AL West, and we talked about that in a couple shows before. Those are great divisions going interleague and battling, and we're going to be watching both of them, especially out here in the North Bay where I am. I keep an eye on both those teams, but it's going to be interesting on AL West to see how these teams are getting get out of the blocks, because I really believe the start of the season, those first 2 weeks, are going to mean so much to try to get that edge, try to get the lead, because you only got 60 games. It's a sprint, no doubt. It's not a marathon where you can go into a losing streak and then try to pick it up later. You're going to have to play these games like playoff games and try to win series and not just going in there and being 1-3 in a four-game series, because you're going to lose a lot in these divisions when these teams start playing each other. And there's going to be a lot of head-to-head, and it's going to be fun. I'm excited for it. Tomorrow's the start of baseball, and you and I can't wait to talk about it each week, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Bill, on with this. I know you're going to be following the Giants. I know you're going to be following the Oakland A's. Is there another team out there that has done enough over the offseason to catch your eye that makes you say, okay, when this team's playing, I'm going to tune in. I'm going to see what this team is about. Is there a squad out there that has caught your eye?
There's two teams. Cincinnati Reds is one team that I think got loaded over the offseason, and the Chicago White Sox. I think that's going to be the surprise team right there, the White Sox. They got some great talent. They picked up some good players. Reds picked up some great players too. Those are the two teams that I'm going to keep an eye on, because those are sleepers. And when you get sleepers like that, they can contend. And we keep talking 60 games. You get hot, you can win a few, get a couple weeks under your belt, you're going to take a lead. So those are the two teams that I'll keep an eye on. How about you? What are you looking at?
Definitely the Reds. I've talked a lot about them. I like the White Sox as well. That's a team that kind of has some question marks. I think it's kind of the unknown. As far as teams that I really am going to be paying close attention to, I like Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay is a team that can really cause some fits in the AL East. I know right now everyone is looking at it as it's the Yankees and everyone else. I've been telling people, don't sleep on the Tampa Bay Rays. They're unorthodox enough that a 60-game season could really they could really make things interesting. And also, I'm curious about the San Diego Padres. I think they're still a year or two away, but throw Tatis and Manny Machado in the same lineup in a 60-game season going toe-to-toe with the NL and the AL West, I think the Padres are going to give us some pretty compelling baseball. So those would be my two teams. If I have to pick one from each league, give me Tampa in the AL and the Padres in the NL.
Yeah, both those teams. I've always liked the Padres. Last year they just slumped at the end, but boy, they got some talent down there. And of course the Diamondbacks start out with them. That's their opening series. And Madison Bumgarner, my buddy here that's now a D-back, he's got opening start for them, so I'll be keeping an eye on him. And I think this whole NL West is going to be a showdown. The Rockies, of course, have improved too. So we'll just see how this all translates, my friend. It all starts tomorrow.
Can't wait for it. Bill Lasky, again, always a pleasure. Bill, before I let you go, please give us the information on where the listeners can follow you.
Yeah, a couple things. I'd love to see your listeners take a look at my new company that I've developed. It's called BigLeagueCoaching.pro. Take a look at it on your website. Really good informational, instructional videos and personal lessons from the big leaguers, Joel Youngblood, Mark Davis, Cy Young winner, Brian Harper, some real fascinating the discoveries on baseball and instruction. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Lasky19, but definitely have your viewers and listeners take a look at BigLeagueCoaching.pro. It's something that we really are proud to make.
Bill, it's always a pleasure. Look forward to speaking again relatively soon. Enjoy opening night tomorrow.
Yep, you too, my friend, and I'll talk to you next week.
We're going to break one last time. More coming up here on Drive Time Sports. We'll put the final touches on today's edition of the show when we return.
Hi, this is Jason Kidd. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Bescarini, KOAL, 750 AM.
We talked a lot of Major League Baseball this week. We're going to talk more baseball on the show tomorrow as well. But we can't forget about the NBA. The exhibition contests are back. We had two finals from earlier today. Again, these games, they do not count towards the final record. But the Clippers topped the Magic 99-90. The Nuggets defeated the Wizards 89-82. And gearing up here in just a few moments, if you have the NBA League Pass or NBA TV, you'll be able to watch the Pelicans and the Brooklyn Nets. And then tonight, 6 o'clock, Sacramento and Miami. Those are the scrimmage games that we get. One thing that I really like about The View, so the designated home team has their logos around the arena, around the court. I think it looks good. The presentation is going to be all right on this NBA restart. But for the Clippers, I mean, this is one of the more interesting teams to watch on the restart because they're a legitimate championship contender. Nobody views the Magic as a championship contender. Maybe the Nuggets, they're tier 2 or 3. But when you look at the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard, load management right throughout the entire year. Kawhi took it easy today, played just 19 minutes of the contest, finished with 9 points, had 3 rebounds, shot 37% from the field. And Paul George is another guy that you got to pay attention to. How long is it going to take him to find his footing? He was pretty good today. He finished with 18 points, shot 46% from the field, 50% from downtown. And his plus minus was plus 10. Kawhi was plus 17. This is a pretty good basketball team. I think we already knew that. But Paul George did not look rusty today. I thought the Nuggets in the Wizards game, from what I got to watch of it, it was really sloppy. You could tell that there's some rust that needs to be knocked off. I think by the time we get to the playoffs, those 8 teams or 9 teams, if you want to count the play-in games, if we get any of those teams are going to be ready to go. I think by the time we hit that, at that point, it'll be 11 games. And while we're resuming a season, you got to remember it was a long layoff. It's been about 4 months. That's a traditional offseason in the NBA. So 11 games is going to be perfect for postseason, I think, as far as getting these guys back into game shape. One of the bright spots today, it comes from the Denver Nuggets, Bol Bol. Bol Bol, the rookie, played 32 minutes. This is the son of Manute Bol. Scores 16 points, shoots 43% from the field. Struggled from downtown. He was 2 of 8 from downtown. But he got his shots up, 6 of 14. Also had 10 rebounds and 6 blocks. Bol Bol was fantastic for the Nuggets today. Paul Millsap also getting into the action. Struggled a bit from the field. Shot just 30%, 3 of 10. He did accumulate 5 boards as well. Paul Millsap, 0 for 5 from beyond the arc. And then Nikola Jokic didn't play bad today. He was 3 of 5, had 16 points, was a perfect 8 of 8 at the charity stripe, had 7 boards, 7 assists, and a block to go along to his name. So NBA basketball is back tomorrow night. The Utah Jazz will get their scrimmage game. Well, 2 of them. We're going to air tomorrow night. Make sure all the kinks are worked out for the restart of the season. David Locke and Ron Boone will give you the play-by-play call. It's been a while since we've been able to say Utah Jazz basketball is back here on KOAL. Also, tomorrow's show, we're going to be joined by Steve Bordstein. We do this every year. Steve and I get together for his show and my show, and we preview everything in Major League Baseball. Steve's going to join us for a couple of segments. We'll talk AL and NL. That'll be tomorrow, a baseball preview as we gear up for the season opener. 2 games tomorrow night, Yankees-Nats, Dodgers-Giants. We'll talk about that on the show tomorrow. I want to thank Bill Lasky and also Kevin Vanderspeck for taking out the time to join us. I will see you tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.